Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony. Today on the show, I'm joined by Todd Moorhead and Justin Cron. And these guys have a really interesting take on the Israel and Palestinian conflict and what can be done about it, and how does God see it, and how does God see the Arabs and the Jews, and how do they see each other. And I think you'll learn quite a lot out of this from the way these guys approach the subject. We welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show Todd Moorhead and Justin Cron.
How you doing, Tony? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Tony, great to be here with you.
Awesome. It's great to have you both on the show today. I've been looking forward to this. It's a really important time for Israel and for, in fact, all of us and associated with that. So perhaps if you can each give the listeners a brief background into yourselves, that would be a good place to begin, I think. So let's start with you, Todd.
Yeah, sure. Born and raised in Southern California, surfed my entire life. Love surfing, and for these purposes, I fell in love with Israel from a very young age, and then going to Israel for a number of years and taking groups, and I've been married for about 9 years, coming up on 9 years this next month coming up, and have two kids.
Oh wow. That's awesome. And why do you think you did fall in love with Israel? Is there a bit of a reason for that?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. My answer is it's something God put on my heart. There's no reason for it. I became a Christian really young, like 4 years old, which is kind of a different story for most people. But I think early preteens, I had this fascination with Israel, with Jewish people, with Bible stories and all that stuff. And up until I got married, I thought it was completely normal for every Christian to just love Israel, to love the Jewish people. And I found out pretty quickly thereafter that's not the case. So yeah, I think it's something that God put on my heart just early on.
And obviously you love the beach. I mean, I can join you on that club there. I live across the road from the ocean, so I understand.
Yeah.
That.
Hey, where do you live? Where do you live in New Zealand?
I live on the coast, north of Wellington, a wee way north of Wellington.
Yeah, I've been there. Beautiful.
Yeah. I've lived in a few different parts of New Zealand, but that's where I am at the moment. But yeah, right across the road from the ocean, so it's great. What about you, Justin? What's your background?
Yeah, well, since we're talking about coastlines, I should tell you I live near what's called the Third Coast, which is near Lake Michigan. So I live in the Chicago area, and I do not surf like Todd does, but I have a high admiration for guys who can, and love walking on beaches too. But I come from a Jewish background. My mother's side of the family is Jewish. Father's side is not. My mother became a follower of Jesus when I was a young kid. A few years later, when I was 8 years old, I did the same. And, you know, there's certainly a kind of a cool story behind all that, but we'll just kind of stay focused on the short version today. For me, I came to realize that the church, meaning, you know, the broader Christian community, historically has not really been a safe and welcoming environment to Jewish people. And I learned a lot about the history of Christian anti-Semitism, and really the poor public relations policy, I guess you can say, between the church and the Jewish people. And that really broke my heart. And so God really led me into trying to invest the best hours of my day into helping the church become a safer and more sensitive environment for Jewish people who want to investigate the life and teachings of Jesus. So I try to do a lot as far as building bridges between the Christian and Jewish community. I am a evangelical Christian as far as categories go. And I believe that it is possible for evangelicals to have authentic and real relationships within the Jewish community, despite our theological differences. And so, that's really kind of what drives me. I guess if there's two core values that I can narrow it down to, is that I firmly believe that because Jewish people mattered to Jesus, they should matter to us. And because Jesus was Jewish, Jesus's Jewishness should matter to us.
Yes, totally.
So there you have it.
Yeah, that's great. And I totally agree with that. Well, having a certain amount of Jewish background myself, not that I've been raised any sort of Orthodox Jewishness or whatever, but there's a fair bit of Jewish in my lineage, I can relate to that. But, today, right now, you know, even in January 2017, Israel's a pretty big focus with the United Nations meeting coming up soon. And it seems that Obama and John Kerry are hell-bent on seeing division in Israel and right down the middle of Jerusalem. Have you guys got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll comment there on that. You know, Israel has been the focal point, really, of history. And it doesn't matter who the current administration is within any country. There seems to be some concern, some focus, some engagement with what's going on with the Jewish people as it relates to their desire to have a safe and secure homeland within their ancient homeland. And sadly, just as we've seen, you know, as far as anti-Semitism is concerned, there is often a double standard that is applied to the Jewish people. And we are seeing that same, in my opinion, that same double standard applied to the state of Israel, where they are expected or they're held up to a higher standard than every other country in the world, where for whatever reason, and we can talk a bit about this if we have the time today, but for whatever reason, there's this desire to eliminate or erase Jewish people from the face of the earth and their memory from the face of the earth. Now, I'm certain that President Obama and John Kerry, John Kerry, have neither desire to wipe them off the map. But from my experience, anti-Semitism is a spiritual issue that I think is motivated by the enemy himself, Satan. And he is a deceiver, and he's crafty, and he has a way of working into situations that ultimately try to undermine Jewish existence in this world. But as we are, of course, reminded by God's word, he is a faithful God who keeps his promises. And no matter what Obama or Kerry or any administration attempt to do, God will protect and preserve his people.
Yes. You got any thoughts on that also, Todd?
Yeah, I love what Justin said, and I just totally agree. I think the scary thing is that we as countries are going to be held accountable for how we treat Israel. And it's just, as a believer and just knowing a fair bit of church history when it comes to the Jewish people, it's like, oh man, can this generation get it right? For one generation, can we get it right with the Jews? And it seems like things are just repeating themselves. History is just fairly cyclical, and like Justin said, the Jews keep coming up over and over and over again, and they're always fighting for their survival. So, just tough times for Israel and the international world.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems that, at the United Nations, You know, they all these resolutions and condemnation of Israel on human rights counts, etc. And it's like, wait a second, you know, they slam Israel for all of these things, and yet you look at Saudi Arabia, we know where if a woman is raped, she gets pretty much stoned to death, and the people get away with it that have done it, and human rights violations in North Korea and China and everywhere else, it dwarfs any human rights violations that there are in Israel, and yet everyone's silent on that. It's insanity.
Yeah, it really is, Tony. I mean, when you think about all of the resolutions that have been proposed or made regarding Israel and the lack of resolutions, like Saudi Arabia or North Korea or China. I think China, just in the last few years or 5 to 10 years, I forget exactly what the length is, but there's been no resolutions whatsoever. And you think about the human rights violations that occur within that country, but yet you look at a little state of Israel, which can fit in the size of Lake Michigan, and there's been multiple resolutions. But yet it's one of the freest, if not the freest, country or society within the Middle East. And so, yeah, it's very disturbing to see these kind of trends within the international community as it relates to Israel.
And I think, you know, we'll be getting into it, no doubt. The fact that there are some genuine grievances amongst the Palestinians and things, but you, as we get into talking about what you're doing a bit further down the track here, I'm sure... Oops, something's tapping.
Sorry, that should be okay. That was just my volume, I think you heard.
Oh, okay. Basically, there are some genuine grievances amongst the Palestinians, no doubt, and, you know, I'm sure you'll talk about that a little bit more. But the fact of the matter is the situation for those that live in Israel seems one heck of a lot better than if most of them were living in an Arab country, and yet you've got all these Arab countries surrounding Israel and trying to basically wipe that little wee slither of land, Israel, out, and turn it into another Arab state.
Yeah, that very much is the case. You think about what Israel is up against, the number of Arab nations that refuse to accept its right to even exist, the number of Arab nations that have threatened to wipe Israel off the map, or maybe not nation, but terrorist groups such as Hamas or Hezbollah. And you would think that the international community would be sympathetic towards the threats that Israel receives, but yet it seems the exact opposite, to where Israel somehow, some way gets blamed for the threats that it receives, as if they're deserving of those threats because of how they are perceived as treating the Palestinians, who they are, as some are saying, occupying within the Palestinian territories.
Yes, that's true. And there's another angle that I won't get into too much in this show. I've covered it in a fair bit in other shows, but you get other people in the sort of truth and alternative community that are going, well, Israel is the Rothschilds, and the Rothschilds banking dynasty owns and controls it, and the Illuminati control Israel, and therefore they hate Israel because of the Rothschilds are to blame for all the world's problems. And I do, you know, I totally believe that the Rothschilds and the Illuminati are to blame for a lot of the world's problems, but I don't believe that they are the sole driving force behind Israel. The nation state of Israel was God's plan, not the Rothschilds' plan.
Yeah, he's always used people. So,
yeah,
that's God's plan for sure.
And a lot of people, you know, seem to use that as the excuse for why they justify that Israel shouldn't exist, and that the land should be the Palestinians, and this is Christians, and
yeah.
You know, I mean, because yeah, of the, kind of people that, you know, that we deal with in the circles. And, you know, like I do a fair bit to try and expose the Illuminati and things. And so I see a lot of the attitudes that are coming from people in that direction. So it's not only the Arabs. Mind you, having said that, there are a lot of Muslims and that are in that camp that are blaming the Rothschilds and using that as their excuse as well. But anyway.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, though, is I think when it comes to anti-Semitism, all excuses are used. With the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was fabricated, that was used, still used today in Arab nations. But at times, the Jews have been the poorest of the poor, and they were still blamed for all the wrongs of the world. So whether the rich or poor, I think the enemy has it out for them.
See,
I think we just need to be, you know, in tune with that.
I actually don't believe that the Protocols of the Elders of Zion were fabricated. I believe that's a genuine document. But I think the author of that was actually Adam Weishaupt, who was part Jewish, but he was a Roman Catholic, a Jesuit, and everything in there is coded, and Weishaupt was the guy that designed the code. So people are seeing things as being talking about all the Jewish Zionism, but that was a kind of a front for the true thing that's behind the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. But I mean, that's a whole thing that could take another whole show, so we better not go there.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah, but what we know for certain is that the Elders of the Protocol of Zion have been used to incite hatred towards the Jewish people, ever since it started to be read by those who read it. So, that's something that to be of concern to all people, whatever the vehicle is that's used to justify hatred against the Jewish people, that needs to be confronted and challenged.
Yeah, and like I say, in that one, all I want to just finish on talking about that is the it's a coded document, and it's not referring to what people think it is, because everything that Weishaupt did as the founder of the Illuminati was done in code. I mean, he was codenamed Spartacus, for example. So everything, and different countries will use different codes, but that, like I say, is a whole other topic, so I don't think we should be going there.
Yeah, it sounds like that's way above my pay grade.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, but just...
Hey, who said that before?
Okay, so I just want to, move on to, you guys are... got a film that you're working on, but before I get into that, I just want to say I've watched the first film from 2012. I really enjoyed it, The Promised Land, and one thing that I got to say made me really laugh in there was that famous surfer Tom Curran in the car and singing Deep Purple's Child in Time, and that made me laugh because that's one of my all-time favorite songs myself.
Oh, so man. Classic.
Yeah.
Tony, we're still friends, though, right, Tony?
Yeah, because Todd wasn't very favorable towards that song in the film, if you recall.
I do. That's what made me laugh, because, like I say, I could relate to Todd Curran so much because Tom Curran so much because that's a part of my background, that song as well, big time.
That's awesome.
So anyway, it was a great film, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And so there's another one in the pipeline. Do you want to let the listeners know what your plans are and what you're trying to achieve now?
Yeah, let me give a short, really short description. Justin could elaborate, but The Hope in the Holy Land is the new film that we're working on. And really it's a dovetail off of Promised Land, documenting my continued journey in Israel, seeking truth, specifically in this case behind the Palestinian and Israeli conflict, with the goal of giving a proper Christian response. So it's really something, it's a journey that is going to be told through partly my lens as I'm discovering some of the things in the Holy Land. So I'll let Justin elaborate more on that, though.
Yeah, we've we've been observing a couple of trends within the Christian community over the past decade or so, and maybe it goes even further back than that, but I think it's become more apparent within the last 10 years. First, there's a growing, among evangelical Christians, distrust of the Israeli narrative, you know, which essentially is that Israel was a mistake, that it never should have been created, and that it created mass injustice against the Arabs within that region. And they would also see Israel as being the main reason or main perpetrator behind the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And that if Israel would just be nicer to the Palestinians, that the conflict would dissipate and peace would emerge. So there's that trend. There's also another trend within the pro-Israel camp, which when it looks at Israel, it often whitewashes pretty much everything it does, as if like Israel can do no bad, and all Arabs are, in a sense, they're the bad ones, and all Israelis, they're the good ones. And it's not quite that simple. Israel, like any country, has its challenges, makes mistakes, just like we saw recently with an IDF soldier who was convicted for killing a Palestinian terrorist who had already been subdued. And there was no need for him to inflict that kind of harm against this Palestinian. And then also, I think coupled within that is that when a lot of Christians think about Israel, they think about it only in relation to the Jewish people. Now, granted, Israel is the national homeland of the Jewish people, but yet at the very same time, 20% of Israel's population is Arab, who are fully functioning citizens within that society. And what we know about God is this, is that God doesn't just care about the Jewish people. Yes, he has a special plan for them, but he also cares about the Arabs and their destiny and their current living situation. And so we want to give some attention to them and bring examples that demonstrate that it is possible for Jewish people and Arabs to coexist, in a sense, to actually love their neighbor, and in some cases to love their enemy. And those are stories that we think people need to see and hear about, so that they can get a fuller understanding of what God is doing there in the Holy Land.
Yes, that sounds great. So your goal is to try and bring some sort of hope and help. Well, if you can't bring peace to the region full on, you can actually bring some peace perhaps between some people at least that you can reach. Would I be right there?
Yeah, you would be correct there. And realizing that any hope for peace between the Jews and the Arabs has to start in the grassroots. It has to start between people, individuals who are loving their neighbors. And if it doesn't start there, we can never really expect it to happen amongst its leaders. And maybe, just maybe, what happens on the ground might inspire their leaders to make some changes. Now, we're being, you know, we want to be realistic, though, too. We understand that if something is ever going to happen in the short term between the Jews and Arabs, it does need to be led by its leaders, just as we've seen happen between Israel and Egypt when they made a peace agreement back in the 80s, 70s, just as well as between Israel and Jordan. So it is possible for there to be peace agreements made Is it going to be a perfect peace? Absolutely not. There will not be perfect peace until the Messiah returns. But in the meantime, Jesus calls us to be peacemakers and reconcilers. And so we want to try to help encourage that process as best as we can.
And let me add, the one thing that we want to highlight is Arab believers in Jesus who are demonstrating this, and Messianic Jews who are demonstrating this. We want to show Muslims who believe in peace as well, and we want to show that you don't have to have the same faith. It's possible, but as evangelical Christians, our ultimate example is to love each other with the unity that Jesus gives us. And so we want to show that and hold that up on a pedestal.
Okay, so that sounds great, and I'm all for, you know, trying to reconcile people with one to another and whatever, you know, race they are and religion and things. But isn't there also a danger that the whole move towards peace can play into the sort of one world religion, global government kind of thing? Because the way I see it, we they're going to try and push us into a system like that. And isn't there some danger of actually playing into the hands of that through the whole trying to create peace? Because I don't see end times being a great time of peace at all. In fact, I see, you know, Jesus speaking like Matthew chapter 24 and Luke 21, etc., where we see anything but peace. So I'm just wondering what your guys' take on that side of it is.
Yeah, well, let me just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Todd. Do you want to...
I was just going to say that could be the way things are going, or the way that we think they're going, although nobody knows because nobody can tell the future. But in the midst of it, blessed are the peacemakers. So we don't want to push some one world peace agenda, you know, the coexist kind of thing. But there's also, it's a lot better than, you know, getting along is a lot better than killing each other too. So,
I can only speak out of my own cultural context here in the United States. But if there's tension and conflict, say between blacks and whites or Hispanics, we as followers of Jesus need to encourage both sides to see the humanity and the dignity within the other. And what motivates us to do that? Well, it's actually our faith in Christ, our faith in the Messiah. And what do we believe will ultimately bring peace and shalom, unity? Well, that really comes through a surrendered heart to Jesus. But a lot of people, we understand, come to know who he is and what his teachings are through seeing it lived out. And so that's what we want to try to capture in this film. And to also, of course, as we mentioned, demonstrate that there are even non-believers who, in their own way, ascribe to the teachings of Jesus when it comes to loving your neighbor. And maybe they understand it differently than we do. We would hope that they would come to a fuller understanding as we see it. But I think it's important to show that not every Muslim, for example, hates Jews. Not every Muslim wants to wipe Israel off the map. And that's a story that isn't typically told, and it's a story that we think needs to be told.
And we saw some glimpses of that in the first film, the Promised Land film, where, you know, with the surfing and you guys, you know, whoever, all getting in the water and surfing, didn't matter what, you know, whether you were Arab or whether you were Jewish or Christian or Muslim or whatever. And, you know, and that was a thing that came through really strongly in that film, which was like a pretty amazing thing, I thought.
Mm. Yeah, I think we got to build bridges where we can, and like it, for me, where God's put me, surfing's one of those bridges that kind of plays that part. So we wanted to tell the movie, we wanted to tell the story of Promised Land through the eyes of surfers.
And you did a great job, I thought.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it, and it's definitely worth people watching it. So this next film that you're doing, The Hope in the Holy Land, where are you sort of going with it in terms of, at the moment, what stage are you at with it?
It will have a common thread of surfing, just not probably not so much a Promised Land, but again, it's like a story told through my lens. And so a lot of the people I meet in the movie are surfers, both Arabs and Jewish. And currently right now we're fundraising. And we have a fundraising teaser trailer out. You can see it at hopeintheholyland.com. And we're raising money so we can go complete this project. So we have a filming trip in a couple months scheduled, and we're moving forward with the production.
Yeah, and what people will see in that teaser trailer is footage that we got from a filming trip that we did back in the spring of 2016. Some of that footage we'll, of course, use in the final film. But we're going to be trying to, as Todd said, raise funds to complete the project while also filming the project. So as we raise money, that's what we'll use to go do our next trip. And we're grateful to be partnering with a nonprofit organization called the Philos Project. You can learn a little bit more about them through our Hope in the Holy Land website. But if all goes according to plan and we see people get behind the project, we hope to be done spring of 2018.
Right. Okay. Some of the Skype is a little bit glitchy, unfortunately. I have to say to people, but I'll do my best to kind of clean it up, but it's a wee bit glitchy in places. So the website hopeintheholyland.com is where they can find you. And is there obvious ways there that people can help out in terms of helping with your funding?
Yeah, they can actually donate right there through the website. The other, of course, very helpful thing is to share the trailer, the teaser trailer, through social media, to like our Facebook page, and to share that with others as well. So the more that people get connected with the new project, the better. Even if for some reason they can't contribute financially, at least they can help get the word out so that when the film is done, more people will be aware of it. But every little amount helps. If even somebody gave a $10 donation, that kind of those little gifts, when they're all added up, make a big difference in projects like this one.
Mm, yes. Yeah, I agree. So have you got any more thoughts along those lines yourself there, Todd?
I think Justin kind of nailed it with where we're going with it. So we're just pretty excited to tell the story. And we've caught some interviews that we've interviewed some people that we've almost come to tears in their interview. It's so radically powerful, and it's so different than what you're hearing in mainstream media. And it's different than what you're hearing from a lot of the, even the Christian community regarding the situation. So we're just excited to get these stories out and to, just share it with the world, really.
Yeah.
I think just to add there, I think people would be surprised that there really are Arabs, Palestinians who support Israel's right to exist as a sovereign Jewish state. Really don't have animosity towards the state of Israel. They're actually more concerned with how they're being treated by their own government, within the Palestinian Authority, whether it be Hamas or Fatah. A couple years ago, I met a Palestinian Christian who's a businessman in the West Bank. And in the course of my conversation with him, I asked him, I said, what would happen to you if you spoke out against the policies and actions of the Palestinian Authority? And without hesitation, and while using his hand to make a horizontal slash across his throat, he said, I'd be finished. And of course, since he's was a business owner, I wanted to make sure that he wasn't just referring to his business being shut down. So I asked him for clarification, and I asked him, what do you mean by finished? And with a very stern look in his eye and a finger pointed to his head, he replied, I'd be finished, as in bullet in the head, finished. And he added that because of that, he just keeps to himself, doesn't really talk about politics with people, and just tries to live and let live. But I wanted to get a little bit more information from him. And I wanted to know what is his life like living in that type of environment where he can't speak out and really say what he wants to say? What is it like to live under what, a lot of people would call occupation? And I was actually quite surprised by his response. And he said to me, if I had to choose between living under Israeli occupation and a sovereign Jewish state, which he then qualified would most certainly become just as radical as Gaza or the Islamic State in Iraq, he said, I choose occupation. And so guys like that are actually quite concerned with the very same thing that President Benjamin Netanyahu or Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is concerned with, is that if there was to be a Palestinian state created today, what would the West Bank actually become, or what's called the West Bank? What would it actually be like? And most people think, or at least I should say a lot of people think, including myself, that it would become just as radicalized as what we've seen happen within the Gaza Strip under Hamas. And can you imagine having a radicalized state buffering right next door to the state of Israel, that's within just a few miles of Jerusalem? And as many may know, there's the widest strip between from the West Bank to Tel Aviv is just 10 miles. Can you imagine having a government similar to Hamas that far from Tel Aviv who could easily shoot rockets? So these are the kind of stories that need to be told, and we hope to do that through this film.
Well, the UN, have basically come out and said that East Jerusalem will belong to the new Palestinian state, which I think they're going to attempt to push through. Oh, I could be wrong, but it's looking like this month is shaping up that they may try to even enforce that Palestinian state before Obama leaves office and have East Jerusalem as the capital. So this could be all happening very quickly.
Yeah, I hope not. It might happen. But yeah, it could.
Yeah, as far as them trying to push it, but I don't think that is at all going to get approved by the UN, or of course through the next administration led by Trump.
Okay. So anyway, I agree. It would be pretty much impossible for Israel to defend something that's only 10 miles wide with the kind of militancy that would be under Hamas and the Palestinian leadership. So what about the money that goes to those people, all the money that's sent there? Do the people see it, or is it all going into the pockets of the leadership?
I think it's going. I think we could look at Yasser Arafat, and when he died, they went in those offshore accounts, and there was a few trillion dollars there, I think. And they've done studies on Mahmoud Abbas, the current leader, how much money he makes a month. Justin, I think I remember a quote about $1 million a month or something like that. But
something like that.
But it's ridiculous. And no, it doesn't go to the Palestinian people. It goes to the corrupt leadership. And it's really sad because people want to see the Palestinian situation better. But it's unfortunately it's not getting better because maybe there's just not enough checks and balances set up. especially yeah, when you I, have the EU giving the EU's giving about the same amount as the US, I believe. And then the Palestinian Authority turns around and actually uses part of that money to award families of terrorists. So the greater terrorist act a terrorist commits, the family of that terrorist gets the money, gets more money. And so this is money given to them by the world. It's like, wow, like what's going on? How come nobody knows about this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I spoke to a Palestinian Christian a few years ago who pulled me off to the side because I started asking him some questions about the conflict. And they're always what I find is they're always very careful to make sure that they don't say something that somebody else is going to hear that they then may use against them. But he said to me, he said, Justin, when your government, meaning the United States, when they give $1 million to the Israeli government, 900,000 of that goes to the people to actually help the people. The other 100,000 goes into the pockets of the Israeli government. He said, but then when your government gives $1 million to the Palestinian Authority, only 100,000 of that actually goes to the benefit of the people, and the other 900,000 goes into the pockets of the Palestinian leaders. Now, certainly, you know, what he was sharing with me was not based on hard facts, was anecdotal, but I think there's a lot of truth behind what he's saying and how he sees how the money trail it exists within the Palestinian Authority. And I think it's something, as Todd mentioned, there needs to be much greater checks and balances and accountability that's given to the people that we're giving money to, and make sure that it's being used in an appropriate way.
Yes. Well, whether those checks and balances will ever be put into place when we go back to considering what the attitude is towards Israel and towards the Arab states, and particularly the Palestinian people, it's hard to see that that's going to change, but it would be nice if it did.
Sure would.
Yeah.
But yeah. And hopefully, we'll see in the next administration here in the United States more accountability provided in some of those areas. But it's going to take more than just the United States. It's going to take the international community. And at the end of the day, of course, it really needs to take, the Palestinian people who are going to hold their own government to a higher standard. And I think, sadly, it's going to require, much hardship for a lot of the Palestinian people to get to that place.
Can you once again give our listeners the website that you guys have?
Yeah, the website is hopeintheholyland.com. And there you see everything. You can read about the project, watch the trailer, find the Facebook page, donate, all that stuff. Justin, you want to give the final word?
Well, final word, again, I just want to remind people that if you're a follower of Jesus, you have a responsibility. We all have a responsibility to love our neighbors and to go even beyond that. to love our enemies. And some of those enemies may actually be the enemies of our best friends. But regardless, we need to be willing to engage with them and gently and lovingly confront them, just as we would want to be lovingly and gently confronted if we were out of step with God's plan for our lives. And so my hope, my prayer is that there will be a generation of courageous Christians who are willing to do just that. And I'm grateful, Tony, thanks for the opportunity today to share this vision, this hope with others. And thanks that we can encourage people through what we're trying to do.
It's been great to have both you gentlemen on the A Minute to Midnight show today. I've really enjoyed listening, and I'm looking forward to actually seeing the results of the Hope in the Holy Land. And I would suggest to people, you know, it's definitely worth looking at the original film too, the Promised Land film, if you haven't already seen it. And is there a way that people, that you can point people that they can see that?
Yeah, sure. They can go to the website promisedlandthemovie.com. So it's promised with a D on the end, promisedlandthemovie.com, and they can view the trailer. And also there's an iTunes link, but if I think it depends on where you are and what country you're in, and the agreements there is with iTunes. So it's, I'm not sure if everybody can view it from there. But you can get the movie. You could actually purchase a DVD from walkingonwater.com. That's an organization that produced it. And but it is basically on every video on demand format. So it's on all the portals.
Awesome. Yeah. So, yep.
Yeah.
I think it's a good watch. Definitely worth people seeing that one. And yeah, I'll be looking forward to hearing how things progress. And I hope you guys will keep us up to date with what's happening with the new film.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tony, absolutely, for having us. It's been a great opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
No worries. Thanks, guys. I've really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Folks, don't forget aminutetomidnight.com. We publish all our shows on there, and we also regularly put new articles on there on a variety of different topics. So you might want to check back there fairly often. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel here. And also, we are donations funded, and there is a donation button on the aminutetomidnight.com website. And we really appreciate those people that do help us out with donations. I write, record, and play all the music used in our shows, and you can find my music at rockshoresounds.com, and there's a link to that on the A Minute to Midnight website. This is Tony signing off for the A Minute to Midnight show, and we'll catch you in the next show, which should be out in a few days.